State Affairs Committee will come to order at 8:15, and I'd like to welcome everybody in the audience, those online waiting to testify. This morning, we have one bill to discuss. It's HB 241, involves title is Divest Investments in Iran, and that is a bill that's sponsored by our good friend and fellow committee member, Representative Carl Gatto. It's co-sponsored by Representative Ramers and Representative Keller. And so with that, we can leap right into this bill. And so, Representative Gatto, would you make the opening statements, please?
I'd be delighted to, Mr. Chair, but I have my committee aide, Thomas Riker, sitting right there, and I think he has spent much more time on it in consultation with some of the people that are involved in the activities on this bill, especially the people that might oppose it or support it. So, Tom, would you take the...
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Can you pull the mic a little closer to you?
Hi, and through the chair, I am Thomas Riker, and I'm staff for Representative Carl Gatto.
Good morning.
So, HB 241, we wanted to stress to the committee, is not just a symbolic bill. Iran is different from a hostile country like, say, Venezuela or Burma, in that they are actively sponsoring insurgency on the ground against U.S. soldiers in Iraq. So this is a nation that we are at least indirectly fighting on a battlefield. Yes.
One moment, please. Sure.
Mr. Chairman, should we bring...
Oh, yes, yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Absolutely correct. We wait all this time to get the CS, and we jumped right into it.
I move the CS for House Bill number 241, version E, before us as a working document.
Okay.
I'll object for the purpose of discussion.
Representative Greenberg has objected for the purpose of discussion, and thank you for bringing that to my... so anxious to hear the bill, we wanted to get right into it. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. And through the chair, thank you, Representative Wilson. But as I said, this is a nation that we are at least indirectly fighting on the ground. This is not just a hostile nation. And so this bill is meant to make Alaskans that are serving overseas, as well as all Americans, safer. And the way that we aim to do that is the bill directs the Department of Revenue to create a list of scrutinized companies, which is language that we borrowed from other states, and then also the federal acts that divest from Iran. And the bar for these companies is set at $20 million is the bar for significant investment in Iran. And again, this is a standard that was borrowed from the federal government in the Iran Sanctions Act of 1996, and then also in state divestment efforts throughout the country. Basically, the funds that are covered under the bill are the Alaska Permanent Fund, the State Retirement System, the Supplemental Annuity Plan, and the Deferred Compensation Program. And once the Department of Revenue compiles a list of scrutinized companies, that would be handed over to these bodies, and they would be expected then to divest their funds from these companies. The other thing that they would be expected to do is in commingled funds. So there are funds that we don't have sole control over, obviously. And in those funds, the best that the Department of Revenue could do, and this is again borrowed from other state bills, is to encourage the managers of those funds to divest the funds from Iran. That doesn't necessarily mean that would happen, nor does the bill mandate then that the state divest its interests from those commingled funds, but we would do our best to encourage those fund managers to do so. Based upon data that came out when Massachusetts was considering a similar bill, and based upon the size of Alaska's aggregate investments, it's estimated that we could be pulling about $450 million in investment out of Iran. So that's $500 million that would no longer be used to fund insurgency, that would no longer be used to fund nuclear proliferation in one of the most unstable regions in the world. So again, this is not just a symbolic measure. This is an active stance against people that do not have America's best interests at heart. And that, again, that number could actually be larger than the $450 million because, you know, we will be encouraging these commingled funds to divest all of their funds, not just the monies that they take from the state of Alaska. And so, obviously, the provisions of this bill, you know, are a rather significant undertaking to enforce. And so we did tailor the language of the bill to specifically allow the Department of Revenue to kind of piggyback off of those existing lists that are out there that the federal government and other state governments have compiled, which is why we used the phrase scrutinized companies. That's one of the big changes in the committee summary from the original bill. Is originally we just said, you know, companies that have a significant level of investment in the nation of Iran. We changed that to scrutinized companies because that brought it in line with the language of existing federal statutes and other state statutes. And the same again with that $20 million bar for significant investment. That would allow the Department of Revenue to use lists that have already been compiled by other state departments of revenue and by the State Department and the Securities and Exchange Commission, so they don't have to do all of that legwork themselves.
Yeah, I'd like to recognize that our Vice Chair, Representative Seaton, has joined us several minutes ago. Good morning.
Good morning.
Continue.
And then lines 1 through 27 of page 4 were added to ensure compliance with the Iran Sanctions Act of 1996. And lines 7 through 14 of page 5 were added to insulate the state against lawsuits that might emanate out of any lost revenues based on this divestment. The bill is negated if the state, if and when the State Department ever removes the nation of Iran from a list of state sponsors of terror, and it would also be negated if the Congress or the executive branch were ever to officially recognize that divestment from Iran is contrary to America's foreign policy. So with all of that being said, we have several witnesses today that we're very excited about, so I will stop talking.
Thank you very much. Representative Gatto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. We had a different bill before us that was a divestiture from Sudan, specifically Darfur, and that was because they were practicing genocide. We don't know if genocide is being practiced in Iran, but that is not the reason why we want to divest from Iran. I think if we've been following the news, we have a country that has, it's difficult to know who actually gets elected in that country, but one thing we do know is that they are producing nuclear material. Now, this is a country that's awash in oil. They have phenomenal amounts of oil, and yet they said they wanted to produce energy from nuclear reactors. It's tough on me to believe that that's what they truly mean. But what is very scary is that they may be a country that's able to arm their allies. They would be arming their allies in particular because their country's president wants to eliminate Israel from the face of the earth. So if you watch the news and listen to the news, Israel is now talking about boots on the ground to move into Iran. This would be, if the U.S. is involved in this, this would be our third war that we'd be fighting. Quite frankly, I think we should all be worried that this country is going to produce nuclear material and sell it and then produce more. Gosh knows who they would be selling it to, but my guess it wouldn't be Canada and the USA, so or Israel for that matter. The only way we have to deal with them right now is sanctions. And sanctions essentially means what kind of a blockade can we do? It may not be widely known, but Iran, for all the oil wealth they have, has to import gasoline. That's a product they are not able to make in sufficient quantities. And a great deal of the gasoline that they use, not the majority of it, but probably 40%, is truly imported gasoline. So that's one way to have some sanctions against them, by cutting off their ability to import things that they absolutely need in order to function. That's what sanctions are, to essentially make their life difficult. Well, in some of the earlier legislation, we had the issues of the difficulty of separating out money going to support the military out of, you know, how our money is commingled. You have a fund that has 10,000 stocks. Some of the stocks have several different kinds of revenue sources. That's extremely difficult for our permanent fund corporation to be able to separate out those individual stocks for being placed on a divestiture list. But you'll notice that in this plan here, we do have a $20 million threshold. We're not trying to do everything all at once. We're not trying to change the world. But we do have to, I think we have to, take a good look at the people whose goal it is to essentially wipe another country off the face of the earth. And if we stand by and do nothing, we'll get what we deserve. This is something we can do. And that's why the bill is before us. And committee aide Tom here told you essentially what some of the parts of the bill were. But I wanted to make sure that we got the philosophy of the bill, that I'm not a kind of a person that wants to stand by and hope for the best when we have an opportunity to do something when we have an opportunity to do it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Question. Several times there have been references to other states having similar type of legislation. Which are some of those other states, and approximately how many are there?
There are approximately 21. I would have to get you the actual list. I know Missouri was the first. They actually did theirs through the executive branch, not through an action of the legislature. Mm-hmm. I know California, Massachusetts, I believe Maryland as well, and then, like I said, I'd have to look at the list for the rest of the states.
So there are about
20 to 21.
About 20 or so.
Mm-hmm.
I think we can find the list when we talk to some of the people who want to testify.
That's fine. Any questions for the sponsors of the bill? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You'd indicated, thank you, Representative Goddard, you indicated that on like page 2, line F, the $20 million, it says for direct investment. Is importing gas a direct investment? I mean, there's no investment in the community. It's just a commercial transaction. So would that be considered an investment? I mean, to me, that's just like buying a commodity.
Mm-hmm. I don't believe, and, you know, we would have to get some further guidance on this, possibly from legal. I don't believe that a direct exchange like that, say the government of Iran, like you said, buying gasoline from our importers would count as the kind of significant investment that the bill is targeting. I think you would have to actually have holdings in the nation of Iran, not just do trade with them.
Reverend Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do we have a list of companies that we're talking about?
We do, but we don't. Fortunately, I've seen the list. We don't have it in front of us, but we have people that will testify that have it in front of them.
Reverend Johnson.
Do you know whether or not any of the oil companies that we're dealing with in doing production in the state of Alaska?
Oh, I'm sorry. You said companies, and I was thinking states.
Are we talking about Exxon?
No, we're not, and I don't believe that any of the oil companies, particularly the ones that are most significant in the state of Alaska, have been placed on lists in any other state. That's something that I would have to confirm for you, but I'm relatively positive because it is something I looked into. So,
Mr. Chairman, I would like to see a list of the companies that we're talking about here that are potential for us to not use, invest in.
I think that's a good idea, but it appears that none of the major producers in Alaska would be on that list.
No, sir.
Okay. Any other questions from the committee at this point? Okay. Any other comments before we go to others?
No.
Question. Would you like to have Pat Galvin come up first or Mike Burns come up first? Which would facilitate the discussion.
I like the commissioner. I think he should get in the barrel first.
Okay. You've been elected, Commissioner Galvin.
Thank you, Representative.
It's my treat.
Plus, he's my constituent, so he gets to go first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Pat Galvin, Commissioner, Department of Revenue. And thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to speak to House Bill 241. I just want to first note that I'm not here representing the Permanent Fund or the Armed Board, although I'm a trustee of both of those boards. I'm here speaking on behalf of the administration and as Commissioner of Revenue. In that capacity, our department will be responsible for implementing this bill, and I just want to note and appreciate that the bill sponsor has crafted the bill in such a way as to substantially eliminate most of the administrative burden that generally accompanies a divestiture policy. And just want to note that the bill has been structured in a way that will allow us to implement this as more of a compliance function in the day-to-day compliance oversight that our department has in place, as opposed to making it a more burdensome sort of accounting process that would have required a fiscal note and other issues associated with implementing the bill. So just want to note that as a just a appreciation for the bill sponsor's crafting of the bill.
So again, it has no major impact on your duties as commissioner or the other commissioners, as far as you know.
Correct. As far as the implementation of the bill, identifying the list and ensuring compliance with the policy, it would be something that could be done on a fairly routine basis. The impact would be, if any, associated with just the diversion of funds from companies that otherwise might be considered to be appropriate investments from just an investment return perspective.
Thank you. Representative Seaton.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Seaton.
I guess I'm looking at this committee substitute for the first time, but under page 2, starting, you know, lines 12 through lines 21, you know, it says the commissioner shall create and update quarterly this list, and then it says on line 14, the commissioner shall make reasonable efforts to investigate all publicly traded companies to determine whether the company is a scrutinized company for the purpose of the section, and conducting the, you may use the following, but it's not limited to. So as I read the bill, you are required to scrutinize, and you shall make all reasonable efforts to investigate all publicly traded companies. This gives you some things that you can use, doesn't exclude anything else. Am I listening to you saying that you shall do this investigation of all publicly traded companies as not a significant item?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, just want to note that I also was handed this CS this morning, and so I've not had the opportunity to read through it or to have the department read through it, but I understand that it is the intent of the sponsor to provide for that minimal impact to the department. We will look closely at the new language to ensure that it complies with that intent. I believe that the language was intended to, as was noted by the presenter before me, allow the department to utilize existing lists. That's right. To utilize previously prepared investigatory materials that would satisfy the standard that is imposed by this statute. We will be looking at this language to ensure that it does not exceed that, but I believe that that the intent is to get to that point. And so I'm speaking more to the intent than to the language that was just handed to me this morning.
Okay, and thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I would like to have the department make that analysis of the language, because as I read the language, it's different than an intent, and it might be much more significant burden. Thank you.
Thank you. Reverend Goddard, where does this go after this committee?
Finance.
Continue, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would also like to comment on behalf of the governor with regard to the general policy that's carried out through this bill. Generally, the governor would be skeptical of an attempt to mix the state's investment policies with any social or political policy. However, the governor does recognize that in certain circumstances, it is necessary for the state as a member of this union to participate in an effort to economically isolate nation states that are troubling to our national interests, and particularly where there is an effort to avoid armed conflict through the imposition of economic sanctions. With that in mind, the governor will be looking at this bill to determine if it represents one of those circumstances. At this time, I am not here to speak either in favor or opposed to this bill on behalf of the administration, but just to acknowledge that while the general intention would be to avoid the use of divestiture policies to further a social or political policy, there are, the governor does recognize there are instances where it would be appropriate, and so we will be looking at this to determine if this is in one of those, is one of those circumstances.
Right, it seemed to me this is not so much of a social issue thing as it would be political and maybe more appropriately national security issue.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, that's what the governor recognizes as well, that this is more of a national security and a issue related to the advancement of our country's foreign policy.
Reverend Nagano.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know that it's a secret to anybody, but quite a few of the weapons that show up in Afghanistan and Iraq are made in Iran. In order for them to make and develop improved weapons, which they are doing all the time, as we can see from the casualty lists and the severity of the IED explosions, they're very much involved in a war with our soldiers. And if there's anything we can do to disable their ability to keep producing better and better weapons, which are maiming our boys and girls that are serving, I don't care as much about some lost profits, and we don't even know if there are lost profits. We know there may be profits made in different areas, but what we know for sure is that this is a country, we may not have a declared war with them, but if they're supplying our enemies, then in most of the opinions of people that just think about it, we are at war with them. And the last thing we should be doing is supporting them in any way, and we are supporting them somehow right now. And the purpose of this bill is to do what we have a moral and obligation as citizens to do, and that is to make sure that we don't support a country that is doing these kinds of things to us. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good statement. I guess there's a question in there someplace, but okay, continue, please. Do you have anything else for us?
Mr. Chair, not at this time.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I really appreciate you coming down here this morning.
Thank you.
You have a lot on your plate this session. Mr. Burns, are you there? Very good call. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to be with you. For the record, pardon me, Michael Burns, Executive Director of the Permanent Fund. We do not have any prepared testimony on this bill. We're just here to answer questions of the members of the committee, if we can be of some help.
I have one question. As you know, we had discussed the potential divestiture in Darfur, which was a genocide. This is not the same thing. Do you have any comparison remarks between the idea of this bill as compared to the idea of Governor Palin's bill and my bill?
Well, Mr. Chair, pardon me.
Are this apples and oranges or just fruit?
I've just, as all of you have just seen this for the first time this morning, the board has a long-standing position against divestment, social investing, those things, and took rather extraordinary step a year ago around the Darfur. They have not talked about this, so we really don't have a position other than This is, it is different than the exception that we did a year ago, and I think I'd be kind of ahead of the board to try to put a position in their mind. It is different.
Wasn't there some change that you approved when we were discussing the Darfur issue, where that might have worked out, might have been possible for you had we proceeded with that other bill? Didn't you make some policy change?
Mr. Chair, we did pass a resolution in support of those bills that were proposed. So we did support. I don't remember the bill number.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, so you did support that, and
but just narrowly. I mean, it wasn't. We didn't change policy other than for that specific bill.
Okay. Which was primarily a social bill, I would suppose. And I know we're discussing another bill, and we should be discussing this one. This, as we said earlier, would appear to me to be more a political and a national security-oriented bill rather than a social bill, although there might be elements of it. Yeah. Would you agree with that?
Yes, sir, I do. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions? Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I noticed that there's a zero fiscal note on the desk included in this bill, and I was wondering if there would be any expenses. Obviously, if we sold these stocks, wouldn't there be a charge to sell the stocks, and might we possibly take a loss on some of these stocks? Would that be included in the fiscal note in this bill?
Through the chair, Representative Peterson, I think at times we have looked at trading expenses, but I think we've tried to look at the fiscal note just as an actual cost that would be, and this the difference in the cost here is that the Department of Revenue, the commissioner, has the monitoring in that where those expenses might lie. It's also hard to speculate. I'm not sure that we have anything that would rise to the $20 million threshold, and I cannot say definitively. I was very surprised with the $500 million number that this might be part of our portfolio. I mean, I don't know if it's a dollar or a half billion, but I would be very surprised. There are, I just don't see that as being part of our portfolio, but I haven't seen the list either.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any other question? Representative Gatto, and then Representative Seaton.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. As a partial answer to that, with 21 states already having established a list of investments that they would have to divest from, would that create a downward pressure on that group of investments so that it might be wise for the corporation to consider divesting without this legislation, because it could wind up being the law of the land ultimately, and those stocks would be lower in value than alternative investments?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto.
You don't know.
I don't. Yeah, I really don't.
But as a philosophy that says this is not just this country, but there are allies that we have that are doing similar things, one would expect with pressure from so many countries to do the same thing to those countries that do have important investments in Iran, that might be a good time to exit those investments.
Through the chair, I think might was probably the operative word in that.
Thank you. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess my question would be more appropriate for the commissioner if we can get him back up later.
Okay.
I'd be glad to yield.
Any other questions? Mr. Burns? Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Please.
Commissioner Galvin, I believe we have a question for you.
That was much later. Later than you think.
Maybe.
Thank you. Mr. Commissioner, yes. I'm looking on page 3, starting on line 11, J, in this section, business operations. And under A, it lists oil-related activities. And the only exemption for that is consists of retail sales of gasoline and related products. If you are to look at sales of gasoline or diesel fuel or jet fuel from one of our major producers that would be going into this country, what kind of documentation would you have to have so that that wasn't going to be used in any military vehicles or any vehicles that are controlled by the government or you know, an Iranian air carrier that is has some kind of government ownership in it? And if you couldn't get that certification that none, I mean, we're talking about an endpoint control of retail sale, does that mean that any oil company that sold either diesel or gasoline or those kind of things would automatically be on this list? Or
Governor Seaton,
do you need to get back to us later on that after further analysis?
I'll probably have to get back to you for a full analysis. However, I'll just observe that my reading of the structure of the bill would not capture a situation where, for example, a producer were to refine a gasoline product that is then sold to a company outside of Iran, and that second company were to then transport it into Iran and sell it. It's not a matter of us tracking a product through the chain of custody to its ultimate end user and determine who along that chain may be a company that falls into this list. I think the idea is that the company that actually makes that final sale in Iran would be the company that would end up falling into this category. And so I think it isn't as broad as perhaps you just described.
Follow up, please.
So if we had a wholly owned subsidiary of one of the large oil companies that was a refiner and sold gasoline or diesel or jet fuel. Well, I don't even think if they sold, I don't know whether related products would be jet fuel or diesel. It says gasoline, and I'm not sure what related products mean. But let's say that jet fuel and diesel are related products, and that subsidiary sold, which is sold that product within Iran without the certification, some kind of certification, it was for retail sale only, or some assurance, that's defined under business operations. So I'm trying to figure out, I'd like you to get back to us and find out what kind of chain of custody or chain of ownership would you as a commissioner be required to look at if it's a, so let's say the refinery is a solely owned a subsidiary of a major oil company. Would that then, if that was sold into the country without that kind of chain of custody, would that throw them onto necessity beyond the list? And so I appreciate you getting back to us on that.
Yes, I'll get back to you. And I think the question that one of the directions that we'll be looking at, just to follow up on the line of inquiry, will be the extent to which a subsidiary is going to affect this determination as well. In other words, if a company has, whether it's a wholly owned subsidiary or a minority stake in a company, does that then place them into a situation where they are responsible for all of the actions of that subsidiary company? And I haven't had the opportunity to examine whether or not that would even fall under that category here. So we'll look at that more closely and get back to you, and I'll probably have Department of Law also provide us with some feedback on that question.
I appreciate that, because, you know, it in one aspect it could be really broad, and another aspect if it's so tight that someone just forms a subsidiary, they can do whatever they want with that subsidiary, and therefore, they've totally circumvented what the intent is. So I appreciate you getting back to us. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Gatto, were you next?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Representative Seaton mentioned jet fuel and diesel. Iran has refineries, and they do produce those products. They have trouble with the gasoline. It's a more difficult product to make, much more difficult, in fact. And I think that may be why we have this specific reference to gasoline. You know, I wish I had more access to what they're doing there, but it's a pretty secretive place. But we can pretty much assume we know where the refineries are and we know what the refineries are doing, but it's not something they disclose readily.
Mr. Chairman. Representative Seaton?
And Mr. Chairman, maybe the commissioner is going to get back to us, or maybe the sponsor, but I guess what I'm looking for on that is and related products. I don't know how broad or how narrow that is, if it includes. I mean, even though we produce jet fuel in Alaska, we may import some jet fuel too, or those kind of things. So it will be good to get the breadth of that analysis. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anything more for, at the moment, for the commission? No, thank you again, sir.
Thank you.
Okay. Is anybody out in the audience would wish to testify? We have Sarah Steelman. Is she in the audience or online?
Online.
Online. Anybody out in the audience? Okay. Let's go then to Ms. Sarah Steelman.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Please identify yourself and then offer your comments.
Sure. My name is Sarah Spielman, and it's a pleasure to be able to share a few minutes with you, Mr. Chairman, and your committee members about an issue that is extremely important to our nation's national security.
Are you in Anchorage, or where are you located? Are you speaking for yourself or a group?
Yeah, I am the former state treasurer of Missouri and started tariff-free investing in the state of Missouri. We were the first to actually divest. And I'm speaking at the request of Representative Gatto. I also, just for the record, am an advisor to a tariff-free portfolio fund. It's a private fund. But I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 241.
Okay.
And I wanted to tell you a little bit about what happened in Missouri. And I won't tell you the whole long story, but some of the outcomes of a long battle that started back in 2005. When I took office as state treasurer, you know, it was shocking for me to find out that we in America are funding the very enemies that we are fighting. We're funding them through our investments to the tune of billions and billions of dollars, which I think y'all have already discussed today. In Missouri, the previous treasurer, when I took office, the previous treasurer was using foreign companies as broker-dealers to invest the state's money. Companies like BNP Paribas, who orchestrated the oil for food scandal and made billions and is still making billions of dollars in loans to Iran today. I also served on the Board of Trustees of the state's pension plan, which is in Missouri is about $6 billion. And I started asking questions about our investments and discovered that we made no attempt at all to exclude public companies that were helping fund our enemies. I found this outrageous, and I began a battle in Missouri to stop taxpayer funding of terrorism. And believe me, at that time it was a battle, but we did have successes, and now, as you heard, there's over 20 states that have implemented similar divestment policies. In Missouri, we started the first terror-free fund in the country. Any company that did business with a state sponsor of terrorism was screened out of the portfolio. And we proved to the pension fund managers who were skeptical about the returns that we could make an equivalent return on investment by keeping the same sector allocations and increasing our holdings of clean companies instead of the companies who did business with terrorist-sponsoring states. We have tough anti-terror policies in the Treasurer's Office, including complete prohibitions on companies doing business with terrorist-sponsoring nations and companies. And like I said, at that time, our broker-dealer list included BNP Paribas and UBS, which we kicked off of our broker-dealer list. We set up the First Nation, the nation's first terrorism screening policy and divestment procedure for a public pension fund. We offered the first terror-free mutual fund in the state college savings plan, and we hosted a police and firefighter terror-free investment summit to educate those guys about the fact that their pension plans may be funding the very people who end up attacking us. And I also encouraged every state treasurer across the country to examine their portfolios and divest from these companies. And a lot of things, you know, have changed in the last 5 years since the Terror-Free Initiative started, but much remains the same. Many states have adopted similar policies. I applaud you guys for taking up this legislation today. You know, the U.S. House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate now both passed legislation increasing the sanctions against Iran. And the threat posed by Iran has escalated with their ability to obtain nuclear weapons and their direct threats against America and Israel. And yet we still continue to invest in companies like Siemens and Nokia, who are helping the Iranian Revolutionary Guard silence the voice of the Iranian people through monitoring, censoring the people's ability to communicate with the Western world. You may hear from the so-called experts, but I was pleasantly surprised that your pen sounds like your fund manager there is not taking a position on this bill. It wasn't so in Missouri. We heard many arguments against doing this from pension fund managers, and you know, there's definitely room for debate on some issues, but our experience in Missouri showed that the arguments we heard were illogical, undocumented, inconsistent, or simply untrue. You know, arguments like the costs are too high, divestment is ineffective, it's too hard, performance will suffer, states shouldn't set foreign policy. And I'd be happy to answer any of those arguments, but I know your all's time is limited. But one thing is clear to me, that the costs are definitely too high if we do nothing. That is why you all are considering this bill. That's why now every citizen has an opportunity. Every citizen has an opportunity to invest terror-free, because in the true entrepreneurial spirit of America, there is a terror-free portfolio that was just launched this past summer by Empowerment Financial Group, which offers individuals their own investments that are not funded by terrorists. That's why this movement continues to go forward, because the costs are too high if we do nothing. No American dollars should ever end up in the hand of terrorists. It is up to us, you and me, and every American to make sure that doesn't happen. This time, failure is not an option. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that I can. I've listened to some of y'all's questions earlier about potential oil companies that did business in Iran, and I know that some of them included Total, that the French oil company. British Petroleum was there. They are no longer there. They got out. PetroChina just signed a new $1.76 billion oil pact with Iran. Royal Dutch Shell was one of the ones operating there. I'd have to double check to make sure they are still there or not. But I know those were. I know that one of the representatives asked that question. But anyway, I'd be happy to answer anything else you all might have.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions for Ms. Shipman from the committee? If not, thank you very much. Did you miss the snowstorm there? I assume you're in the St. Louis area, are you?
I am. We got snow for the last 2 days. I bet we got more snow down here than you guys have up there.
Well, in Juneau, there's no snow on the ground. Thank you very much.
You're kidding. Thank you.
Couldn't make
but Anchorage had plenty, I'm told. But we're not in Anchorage because we all flew south for the winter from Anchorage to Juneau. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
I see we have Brian Kane is for questions only. Mr. David Gottstein, are you online?
And Mr. Chair, are you able to hear me?
Yes, I can.
Thank you. I'd like to, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thanks for allowing me the opportunity to testify today. I also want to thank Representative Gatto, Ramos, and Keller for their sponsorship of the bill.
Hello.
Hopefully, we'll be able to answer
Mr. Gottstein.
Many of the questions that you've had, because there has been a lot of thought and a lot of detail in terms of the technical aspects to accomplish a very complicated thing here.
Mr. Gottstein, could you back away in the mic?
Fully understand what we're asking of you, but for the committee record, my name is
David
Gottstein. I'm a resident of Anchorage. I'm also the Alaska chair of the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, an American advocacy group that tries to foster good relations between the United States and Israel, America's staunchest strategic ally and the only true democracy governed by the rule of law in the Middle East.
Could you back away the microphone just a little bit, please?
Pardon?
Could you back away the microphone just a little bit? We're getting some kind of interference. You're too close to the microphone, I think.
Okay. Is that better, Mr. Chair?
Yes, it is. Because I'm not sure what you said before. I'm sure it's interesting, but go ahead.
Okay. Today I approach you regarding a sobering issue. The United States, along with the West, is under attack by radical Islam. Those trying to convert us or to destroy our way of life are using every means at their disposal to attack us in their holy or against us. Terrorist incidents seem to be reported almost weekly from around the world. Almost all rooted in radical Islam, not ordinary Islam, but radical Islam, that unfortunately controls most of the Muslim world. Recent arrests in Houston, Denver, and Brooklyn these last few months alone, along with the Fort Hood massacre and now the Christmas Day thwarted airline suicide attempt, all point to the fact that we are under siege even on American soil. Even though Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, and other radical Islamic movements spreading terror and death across the Middle East and Asia are a loose collection organizationally, they all share the embracing of jihad, or holy war, against the West. And that makes their collective arsenal deadly and sizable. At the heart of the radical Islamic movement, and the most dangerous, is Iran. That is because the intersection of their vast oil wealth controlled by a radical Islamic government determined to develop nuclear weapons has allowed them to become dangerously close to completing their decades-long march to join the nuclear club. Almost every week, including this week, both yesterday and today, we hear about their progress. The prospects of a nuclear Iran capable of launching intercontinental ballistic missiles as far away as Europe, with Israel clearly in its sights, and the danger of them spreading weapons to their allies, along with for sure starting a nuclear arms race in the region, all has to be balanced against the far-reaching negative consequences should military action need to be used to derail Iran's weapons program. The only good outcome is that we get Iran to change their behavior and stop weapons development. Including our arsenal of tools to cause that change include diplomacy, sanctions, blockades, and then military action. Diplomacy hasn't and isn't likely to work. That leaves sanctions as the appropriate tool at this time, a peaceful approach. Sanctions have in the past had mixed results for sure. However, recent revelations about the advancement and state of Iran's nuclear weapons program necessitate our using all peaceful means possible to solve the problem before having to consider harsher actions. The hope is that a collection of enhanced sanctions, including state divestitures, and the passage of the Iran Sanctions Act passed just a couple of weeks ago at the federal level, intended to thwart an already weak economy, including the importation of refined petroleum products representing 40% of their domestic fuel use, might push the rulers to change the behavior. And I'm going to digress from my prepared remarks to talk a little bit to maybe fix some confusion about the refined aspect and the divestiture piece. These are two different sanctions, forms of sanctions that were in separate bills in Congress and were combined. One is the divestiture program that was in the Iran Sanctions Act that had been referred to earlier, first passed in 1996. The other is the Iran Refined Petroleum Sanctions Act, which is an attempt to limit the importation of refined products into Iran, whatever method that is, whether it's gasoline, jet fuel, whatever it is. And now that both have been passed, both sets of sanctions are in place. In effect, it makes moot some of the questions that were asked before, because now it's the law of the land that the president has the authority to go ahead and do things like saying it's illegal for insurance companies to insure oil tankers or fuel tankers that are bringing refined product to Iran. Those are the kinds of things that this bill is intended to do. The divestiture has to do with companies that are engaged in the development and enhancing the Iranian regime's ability to garner money through the enhancement of their oil fields. It has nothing to do with the importation of the refined products. That's another set of sanctions. So the only impact that would take place on the state of Alaska, for example, regarding Shell, that I believe may still be on it, Total is like BP is pulling out, is that one day the state would own shares in a company, and the next day it wouldn't. And at very minimal cost in terms of a transaction cost, but it wouldn't change any relationship that the state or any other third party would have with that company. It would just mean that simple thing. And I'll talk more a bit later about the portfolio impacts of that, but I wanted to make sure that I clarified that we were kind of mixing apples and oranges in that discussion.
Okay. Could you wrap it up here?
During a period of intense public pressure as a result of stolen election last June, there is an extraordinary opportunity to influence things positively and hopefully avoid the need for a discussion about military options. President Ahmadinejad, a self-proclaimed Holocaust denier, clearly has in his sights the wiping of Israel off the face of the planet, which if he were to try and accomplish through nuclear means, would have devastating and calamitous economic consequences worldwide as the oil-rich Middle East would turn into a firestorm. As respected legislators, you are most often consumed by the onslaught of requests you get from constituent groups and colleagues, especially during the shortened legislative session, all of which pretty much have to do with local and or statewide issues. Seldom, however, are you asked to grapple with national issues, but today is different. Today you have the opportunity to join in the most serious war ever since the defeat of the Nazis and the Soviet Union by joining forces with all our men and women in uniform who are deeply engaged in the war against radical Islam and their tactics of terror. 20 other states have already directed their investment pools, and I supplied the committee with a list of those states and the list of scrutinized companies by fax during the other's testimony.
Okay. We're going to have to give you about one more minute to wrap it up. If we're going to discuss the bill, we're going to have to get to it.
Okay. With all due respect, Mr. Chair, we respectfully ask for your support of legislation calling for the divestiture of stocks within the permanent fund and the reserve accounts, which was not mentioned in the legislation, for these scrutinized companies. The legislation has no other impact on other state or commercial activity. The legislation before you, like the one just passed at the federal level, would, among other things, protect fiduciaries from deviating from the prudent investor rules regarding unbiased investing because it is so critical to our national security.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate most of your comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is probably the most important issue facing the country today, and I appreciate your time today.
I understand that. without national survival, all the other issues are becoming rather moot. Any questions for Mr. Gottstein? If not, thank you, sir, for your input. I think it was very well put. Is anybody else online? Anybody else in the audience? Okay, I'll close public testimony, and with thanks to everybody who has participated so far. We'll now move to committee discussion on this bill. You want to go around the table here? Any comment? Representative Seaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I appreciate, some of the testimony we've had, but I think that, in some ways we're beyond our level of expertise. I mean, we're talking about Al-Qaeda and radical Islam, which is a Sunni, which is definitely in opposition to Shiite Islam, which is Iran and this bill. So, I think that we need to be aware that some of the time we are maybe mixing apples and oranges, and we are doing, we just need to be aware that when we're talking about some of these things, we need to be much more clear. I am not any expert on those kind of things, and so I just don't want to make sure that we're indicting all of a religion or something else here, and I just want to make sure that we have a bill before us, and we need some further definition on that bill before we know what it all means and how it impacts. But yeah, just wanted to make that clear.
I agree with that, and I think the comment was made. Radical Islam as compared to traditional Islam. So, and we're not really talking about the intricacies of Al-Qaeda and all the other groups over there. They're too numerous to mention. We are concerned about national survival, I think, because we are part of the nation. But here the issue is, what can we do, perhaps, in Alaska to add to national security? And the idea being that if we don't invest in this company, that's one small part, maybe toward America's agenda. Any other discussion at the table here? Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am concerned, and I think that Mr. Gottstein pretty much summed it up in his conversation about Shell. I'm a little concerned that this really does any good. I mean, he basically said one day we own stock, the next day we don't, and we still have Shell doing business in our state, and they're partners with us, and it's business as usual. So I'm wondering if this type of, I don't think I've seen a lot of evidence today that shows this type of divestiture is actually going to have any effect. If we really wanted to have an effect, we'd quit doing business with Shell, and we'd quit doing business with these companies that do business with Iran. So, I think this may be just one of those make us feel good kind of things. I'm not sure how much good it does. I certainly haven't seen any evidence that this will have a tremendous effect on anyone in Iran, and I don't see them monitoring us and saying, oh my God, Alaska's not going to spend their money on our companies anymore. So I'm not certain it does any good, and I certainly don't want to hold it up, because if we can do a little bit of good, we should. But I just have doubt that we do much good when we take on these, for lack of a better term, feel-good policies. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
National survival does make me feel good, though.
If I thought this did anything to do that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be leading the charge.
Okay. Do you think it does any harm?
That's why I'm not going to do anything to hold the bill up, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other comment? Representative Peterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've been a longtime supporter of nuclear nonproliferation, and if by divesting Alaska's stocks, if we could anyway slow down the development of their weapons, which we don't know if we could by divesting, but there's a possibility that it might. So I feel like I'm going to be supporting this legislation just because there's a possibility that we could help.
Representative Wilson, have any comments? Representative Grunberg, you've been rather quiet. Do you have any comment?
I certainly would like to see the bill move along.
Okay. Any other comments? What are the wishes, Representative Gatto? Would you like to sum up, Representative Gatto? Let me get Representative Seaton first, and then I'll let you do a wrap-up.
And thank you. And I just noticed on the information, the RAND investment companies, we have ENI, which is operating on the North Slope. We have Royal Dutch Shell. We have Shell International Finance. We have Total, which is one of our emerging companies on there. Now, if what we're talking about, and I guess I agree with Representative Johnson, that if what we're talking about is it's fine to do business with these guys and do everything, we just can't own their stock. If that's the if that's what this bill says, is we can't buy their stock, but we can lease them oil, you know, have them participate in oil leases and basically be in partnerships with them on because we are in partnerships in their investments when we do credits and tax upstream tax depreciation, I can't think of the word right, deductions.
Yeah.
So we are actually participating in the wells and things. I'm not sure what the effect is, but I hope that we'll get a little more information on the questions we've asked before we move the bill.
Representative, I'm saving you to last. Yeah.
Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
And Representative Seaton brings up an interesting issue. Since we are partners in these companies, with these companies, responsible for their profits, are we in fact on the watch list? Are we, as the state of Alaska, because we contribute to these companies, do we qualify as someone that should be on the divestiture? I mean, we're actively participating. We are giving them money. I mean, how far does this go down the list? Are we now the bad guys?
Okay. Any other comment? Emily Wilson?
Well, as I look at this list, it kind of amazes me that there's only 36 on the list, but 9 are from Malaysia and 6 are from China. That's quite a bit. The rest of them kind of are sprinkled around, but I think we need to think where most of them are from, and it's going to be hard, I think, because we are partners with some of them, and we sure don't want anything to. I think we need a little more information before we go ahead and do this, just to make sure that there aren't any unintended consequences.
What information would you suggest we get?
Well, at least kind of know. I would like to know for sure if there would be any ramifications for Alaska, because we might have partnerships with some of these companies.
Representative Seaton?
And Mr. Chairman, some of the information, I think we requested the commissioner to come back and analyze this bill that he's just seen and what the responsibilities are going to be for him. I mean, we know the intent, and that's what was talked about, but we have a structure of a bill that has, you know, and that's what's got to be followed, is the law. And from here, it's going to finance, and finance is going, they may look at it from other aspects, but they're primarily looking at it from the finance aspect. And I think the internal structure of the bill and how it works is something that we in this committee need to do. And the commissioner also said he would get from the Department of Law legal opinion on how far this goes and subsidiaries. And I think the commissioner has been listening to our discussion of our essentially partnership in those wells that at least two of these companies have with upstream costs or tax credits. Those may not count. It'd be nice to have a legal opinion that says our participation with 60% of the costs of those upstream developments is or is not covered under this bill. I just think that we need some definition on these and finding the terms. I'm not opposing at some point considering it, but it just I think the CS today, I don't know the firewalls and the sidewalls and the legal opinions of what all this means, and so that's the question that I'd like to see answered, Mr. Chairman.
If I could ask the commissioner, just a moment, please. We haven't seen it, Bob, some questions, and how long would it take you to get that type of information that he just outlined?
Well, I'd have to talk to the Department of Law to see, with regard to particularly the last issue that he brought up, the interrelationship between our production tax credits and this bill. But I think off the top of my head, think probably about a week, given the time crunch that we have. I don't think we want to take much more than that.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions? Thank you, Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like a little leeway in my questioning, if I might, please.
Quick leeway.
A number of us were very interested in the Darfur bill. And this seems to be structured somewhat the same, although some of the policies may be different. Has your position at all changed on that bill? What's happening with that?
I don't want to mix bills too much.
No, I don't, but I'd like, since we have these people here today, I'd like a little leeway, if I might.
The position hasn't changed on the bill, although I think the situation has changed with regard to the situation in Darfur.
I don't want to go down that path.
All right.
Because that's a whole other issue. Speaking of myself, I still share all the concerns I ever had before on Darfur. My principal concern here is national security of this country. That's my prime concern. Mr. Kane, can you weigh in on any of the questions that Representative Seaton had?
I don't have any major comments. I would also have to take some time to research any of the deeper concerns that have been asked by some of the committee members.
Okay. How long would it take you to do that, approximately?
It would take a few days, at least.
Okay, a few days.
Depending on the depth of the questions that I was presented.
Okay. Thank you. With that, I'm going to ask Representative Gatto to do a wrap-up and see what the committee wants to do.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. I think we could research this information right up to April 20th. There will be no end to the number of details that you can fish out of all of the issues that we're facing here. But the big issue that we're facing is, I count with utmost seriousness, just as you do, the number of GIs that are no longer with us. And two-thirds of them are killed not in battle, but by improvised explosive devices. And where are they coming from? Coming from Iran. And if you have nothing but a philosophy that you're just not going to support people that are killing your children, that is enough in itself. Even if you'll say, you know, it's not going to reduce the number of injuries, which I don't think is true. I think whatever we do has an effect. This is not to destroy the country of Iran. This is a way for us to have a meaningful action that could result in a little less damage to our activities that take place over in Iraq and Afghanistan. Afghanistan is a war we're going to be in for quite a while. And if you've watched on television the value that the enemy gets from these explosions, which are manufactured in Iran, they've got the labels on them. They've got the shipping instructions practically. They're intercepted all the time. They've got stuff that they capture. Where is it made? They trace it back to Iran. I wish that this bill would end Iran's involvement. We can't. But the bill does something that prevents some of the losses that we're taking. And if somebody wants to investigate this thing for the next 6 months, you can. But how about we investigate it after we pass it and then come back and go, you know, we were wrong. This is not protecting our GIs one bit. I doubt very much we're going to get that result. We're going to find out or not find out that it's been helpful, but it's certainly not hurtful. And what we're finding out in the testimony we've heard is that when you do this, it doesn't hurt your investment portfolio. That's really the only thing we're worried about. Are we going to do damage to our personal investments? Well, take for 1 second and think about it as your personal investment. You discover in your portfolio, that is your treasury, that some of it is helping Iran. Would you be willing to say, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to value a stock or a bond or something that supports a terrorist organization? Would you not act even though it meant that you yourself might lose a few dollars? I would. I would hope you would. And I would hope that the permanent fund has no real problem in doing this. It might cost a few bucks. I don't know. You're trading shares all the time. This sort of goes into the mix. But I'm looking out for something beyond money here. Go to some of these memorials. Do it someday. Thank you.
Thank you. I would ask Commissioner Galvin and Mr. Kane to respond to some of these questions either to this committee or to the next committee of referral as it turns out. And if anybody would wish to make a motion, I will entertain a motion. Yes.
An objection on the CS?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you for...
Oh, yeah. Remove the objection. Do you move your objection?
I'm just wondering, briefly, what were the different... Is there a major difference between the CS and the bill itself?
It made it somewhat easier for the corporations that have investments to have some limits that make it easier for them to deal with it. The CS doesn't make it more difficult. It made it less difficult.
Okay. I remove my objection.
Yeah, is removed. And regardless, I'd like to have these people try to answer some of those questions.
One more point, sir. If divestiture had no effect, none, why would BP and Total both remove their investments?
Representative Peterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just an attempt to answer that question. It might be pretty dangerous for their employees to be working over in that environment. I mean, I've heard that in some countries around the world where oil companies work, their employees get taken for ransom and that type of thing. Westerners maybe are not too popular in Iran, possibly. So if you're an oil company doing business over there, you may have a hard time getting employees that want to go over there and work. I mean, I would think you would. So maybe that's another reason. And it could be political. I mean, their governments may have, you know, gave them a clue that it may be time to pull out of there. And maybe this divestment is giving them sort of a heads up. Who knows?
Okay. Brief at ease, yes. Okay. I basically support this bill. I would like to have some answers to some of the questions. And if it meets the agreement of the committee, I'd like to bring this bill up at either the next committee hearing or the one directly after that. Our next hearing is going to involve APOC. It's going to involve the recent Supreme Court decision on cooperation, campaign stuff. So if we have time on that, I will bring the bill back up at that time. And if not, it'll bring the bill up at the meeting following that, if that meets the approval of the committee.
I'm okay.
Okay. With that, I'm going to close out today's hearing on this particular bill, and on Saturday, oops, not Saturday, forgive me, Thursday, February 11th, 8 o'clock again, we'll have an overview on the potential impact of the U.S. Supreme Court ruling on Citizens United case regarding campaign contributions. And once again, I'll preface my, that hearing is not going to be whether we agree with the bill, we like the bill or don't like the bill or whatever. It's going to be on what impact does it have for our legislature, and what, if any, legislation do we need to put out, or the administration needs to put forward. So any other business to come before the committee? If not, thank you. Very, very interesting discussion this morning, and I do support the bill, but need to work out the details. We are adjourned.